Welcome to episode 13 of All the Small Takes, presented by the Big Baller Brands. If you don't listen to this podcast, then you are not a big baller. And I'm here with Cooper, and just Cooper this week. Mm-hmm. Our good friend, our compatriot John, is in what he calls the den of hyper-consumerism, Disney World. We've never done just the two of us, so Cooper, how are you doing?
I don't know, I still feel a little awkward about this whole encounter. I feel like I'm FaceTiming you, which, I don't know. It's just weird. Don't love it. Also, don't know how I'm supposed to, like, debate with you. Kind of reserved those moments for John. I don't know.
I'm sorry that the thought of having a one-on-one conversation with me is that stressful.
Mm-hmm. It really is. Kind of makes my hands really sweaty. I've had to wear, like, a sleeveless basketball jersey just to calm myself down.
Yeah, Cooper's just rocking. He's rocking a Kyrie Irving Cavs jersey, maybe to assert his dominance.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't, like, it's gone noticed that behind you every single week in the podcast is your dumb Boston Shamrock flag. So,
yeah,
it has to come out.
Well, I would say you have a little more reason to be boastful about your team than I do about mine, but we're going to get to that here in a minute. First, we want to let you know that you can find us on social media. Twitter at Small Takes, Instagram small_takes, Facebook All the Small Takes, and Gmail allthesmalltakes@gmail.com. Let us know what you think. Our hyper-consumerism correspondent John was supposed to send us a dispatch this week, and he didn't.
He's so wrapped up in the hyper-consumerism that he just couldn't get to us, which I think he would say is part of the problem of hyper-consumerism, even though I don't fully understand what hyper-consumerism is.
I have no idea what it is. I know Disney is it, and so I know he's in a lot of, I don't know, he's dealing with a lot right now, so thoughts and prayers to John in this difficult time. He'll be back with us next week, but it's just Cooper and I this week, and we're going to talk some NBA playoffs. The players who we spent at least a couple podcasts discussing, should we be panicked about the Cavs, what's going to happen in the playoffs with the Cavs, and they have steamrolled through the first two series, 8-0, haven't lost a game. Cooper, what are your thoughts on how they were able to turn it around, why they were able to turn it around?
Some magic light switch that LeBron keeps in his locker? I don't know. I think, first of all, I want to note how awesome it is that we can freely have this conversation about the NBA without John, because I kind of do feel like every single time we bring up the NBA, we're dragging him into something that he doesn't want to talk about.
Well, it's mean, right? Because his team is not.
That's true. Yeah,
also, maybe. I think
who wants to talk about the 76ers?
We should just say as many things that will make him mad as we can while he's gone, because he's going to listen to this and just fume and, like, probably try to, like, talk into his headphones thinking that he's part of the conversation, like a crazy person. I kind of like that visual.
Yeah, I kind of do too. But it also, I'm not entirely positive that John listens to every single podcast. So this will be like kind of a big test.
Oh, this is such a test.
John, did you listen to the podcast this week? I don't know.
No,
we're going to see.
We'll say the most outlandish stuff about everything that he would get really, really upset about. So
just give him like a random pop quiz next week. So that's coming a little. Yeah, I mean, the Sixers aren't relevant. So, I mean, it's kind of hard to talk about them. The East is LeBron's conference. I think he's showing it. I don't know. I think the biggest difference in this Cavs postseason is just they're not bored anymore. It matters to them, which I think, like, that sounds ridiculous because you're a professional athlete and you're getting paid a ton of money to play a game in which, like, the millions of kids and adults are jealous that you get to do that for a living. But I think there's some truth to it. I think the Cavs were bored during the regular season. I know I've talked about that a little bit. But I think it's shown up, like, statistically. For example, like, LeBron James, I think I can't remember if it was game two or game three of the Raptors series. His, like, average distance in, like, field goal attempts was, like, 1.5 feet, which just isn't something that you would see in the regular season. LeBron's attacking the rim without mercy. And I think it's a big difference for the Cavs when he decides to attack the rim instead of, you know, putting up floaters or mid-range jumpers and things like that.
This is so uncomfortable. This is where I feel like John should jump in and say something about how basketball would be better if there were no shot clock and everything was around the rim and there were no three-point arc.
Exactly. And they eliminated dunks.
And you were just layups.
Layups and finger rolls. Or that you had to play every shot off the glass.
John is a big fan of the square on the backboard. You use the square.
Well, for us inexperienced players, inexperienced. Sorry if that came through unclearly. The little square house helps us out a lot.
It's a guide. What were we talking about? Oh, the Cavs. It is almost like they have a switch, which doesn't feel good to say, because you want the regular season to matter and you want to feel like other teams, like that they're trying and that they feel challenged by other teams in the regular season. But like they struggle a little bit at the outset of the Pacers series, which is kind of characteristic of LeBron teams in the past of kind of, I don't know, at least earlier in the postseason, kind of rounding into form. But this Raptors series was so impressive.
On both sides of the court too, which I think was a big thing. They looked very effective defensively and kind of employed that double team like switch onto DeRozan. And really the only way the Raptors could get points consistently was by DeMar DeRozan getting to the free throw line and using a move that was is technically not supposed to be allowed anymore. Like, you're not supposed to be able to like swing your arms and pull up through a defender's arm and get a foul, but he consistently did. Yeah, James Harden does it all the time. But I'm not really complaining. The Cavs swept. So I just kind of goes to show, I think the Cavs are stepping it up on defense, and offense has always been there for them. But they're going to need it to beat the Warriors. So
LeBron, just to go back to your point about his shots being within the paint, he's also, when he does shoot from three, which is rare, he's not settling, but when he does shoot from three, he's been effective.
Yes. Yeah, he's shooting at a much higher percentage.
Yeah, which may be small sample size, but if he has that shot working, he's already unstoppable. Like, he can already get to the rim at will. If he is even a remote threat from three, to the point where you have to defend him 20, 25 feet from the basket, like, in his face, you're done. Mm-hmm. And that's the scariest part of it all. And I even texted you after it was game four, I think, of the Raptors series. I was just, I had a moment of
fear.
Fear.
Yeah, fear's a good word.
This brings us to another good point about the Cavs and the Warriors, too, who have looked equally impressive, also made it to their third round, 8-0. Poses an interesting question. Do we think either the Cavs or the Warriors could potentially go 12-0? And make it to the NBA Finals without a loss, and then is 16-0 in the picture for either of them? We'll start with 12-0.
12-0. Okay, sure. I think it's very likely for both of them. I don't know. I think the Warriors, we've been saying kind of all year, thinking that the Warriors are, you know, heads and shoulders above everyone else in the NBA. And maybe they are, and I don't think we'll really know until we get to see a matchup with the Cavs in the Finals. That matchup, possibly against the Rockets, if the Rockets find a way to pull out this series against the Spurs, I think James Harden and the Rockets could shoot some stupid number of threes and they can easily pull out a game. So maybe the Warriors don't sleep. Yeah, you could say the same thing about the Cavs, because we've been saying, especially if, you know, the Celtics win, because that's something we've said consistently, is the Celtics are like a, you know, they're like Duke, and that if they are shooting well, they're shooting well and they're hard to beat. And plus it would be, you would have to go into the Garden, the fake Garden, for the first two games. So I think that's a challenge. I don't know. We're still kind of waiting to see who comes out of the other two games, I guess.
We'll get to that here in a minute, Celtics-Wizards series. But I would agree with you. So did you say the Warriors or the Cavs?
I said neither. I completely dodged the question like John.
I was trying to think back to your answer, and I was like, he didn't really give an answer.
No, I did not give an answer. I think the Cavs are more likely to, especially if they play the Celtics. Okay. So if everything goes according to plan, I think the Cavs are going to employ this strategy that is going to make it hard to play Isaiah Thomas. And I honestly, like, as Brad Stevens, he's going to be forced to do something, because on defense, I see every single play as switching Isaiah Thomas onto LeBron James. And that's just something Isaiah Thomas will not be able to handle. And then especially with the spacing the Cavs have, if you double LeBron, he's going to pass it out. It's almost like a DeAndre Jordan free throw technique.
So the Celtics just don't switch then, and they find a way to adjust. And
I not switch. I mean, you're forced to switch if you get into like some pick, whatever. We'll ignore that.
I think they can minimize the amount of vulnerable situations that Isaiah's put in. And I actually think, going back to a regular season game, it was like late in the season that the Celtics played at home against the Cavs. They have the ability to do what the Cavs kind of did to the Warriors last year in the finals, which is slow the game down. And I think they won that game against the Cavs late in the season. It was in like the 80s or 90s. I think there's at least one game where the Celtics managed to do that, if in fact the series happens. Again, big if. I think the Warriors could absolutely go 12-0. If you look at how they really were never pushed by this Jazz team in the second round.
I mean, it is the Utah Jazz.
I honestly think that the...
And their nightlife's not that inspirational.
the nightlife isn't that inspirational. So much disrespect. So much disrespect. And we're going to get to that in a minute, too. But I think the Rockets, I agree with you. That poses a more dangerous matchup for the Warriors because they could, as you said, have a game where they shoot lights out and James Harden shoots 20 free throws and six threes. But I think the Celtics have at least proven that they can steal a game or two playing the right style. And I agree long-term in the series that matchup with anybody on Isaiah Thomas is problematic. But if one team's going to do it, it has to be the Warriors. Because for them to lose, you really need two, if not three of their four studs to have an off night. And the chances of that happening in combination with that game from James Harden where he drops like 45, I don't know if that's likely enough.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm going to say this now. I think there's probably like an 80% chance both teams do it.
Right.
And I think that's just me doing it for the podcast, because as soon as I said that, the Cavs are going to lose in the Eastern Conference Finals. I took a risk for you. I hope it pays off.
No, you're just trying to reverse jinx them.
Hold on. I used my anti-jinx card already for this past series because I was a little worried about the Raptors, and then Kyle Lowry went and got hurt and kind of like it didn't matter anymore. So I already played that card once this postseason. I don't think it's going to pay off for me.
If there's one thing we've learned, this podcast has infinite cards to play when it comes to jinxing people. Like, we cannot help ourselves jinxing people. But let's talk about Celtics-Wizards really quickly. I'm a little nervous. The series could easily be 3-1 Wizards right now, if not for Isaiah.
Probably should be 3-1.
Putting Wizards. The team on his back in Game 2. Mm-hmm. And then the Celtics were not even close to competing with the Wizards in Games 3 and 4 in Washington. No. You were saying this before we went on air, and I didn't think about it this way, but as you said it, I agreed with you, and it's kind of scary. If the Celtics don't win Game 5, which is tomorrow... As you're hearing this today, tonight, if the Celtics do not win Game 5 tonight, they're not winning the series. Because I think a Game 6 in Washington, they have shown me nothing that would lead me to believe they can win a game in Washington or even stay competitive in a game in Washington.
Yeah, I get this feeling. I had mentioned it earlier on in another episode about how the Celtics, or maybe I hadn't mentioned it in an episode, it came up in a text or something like that, about how the Celtics like to be this like, faux kind of bad boys team, like they're trying to like recreate this image of being the Pistons, even though they're like average, I don't know, height is probably like a solid foot smaller, but they're trying to like recreate that kind of mentality. But I feel like they kind of lose an edge to the Wizards a little bit. I feel like the Wizards have sort of this edginess that they play with.
The Wizards bullied them. They bullied them in games three. Mm-hmm. Physically, emotionally. They got bullied.
I'm even like ignoring the Kelly Oubre hitting the right stick on Kelly Olynyk. But I think just the rest of the game, the Celtics got bullied. I think John Wall I love Isaiah Thomas. He's probably like the only Celtic that I've liked in the past like decade and a half. But John Wall's kind of showing himself to be a better point guard.
Yeah, he's just asserting his physicality. And the Wizards do have an edge, and they've had an edge against the Celtics all season, and Celtics have had an edge against them too, but right now the Wizards are tougher. They push the Celtics around.
I really want a Game 7 in which the Wizards wear black in Boston. I just want that again. So bad.
You might get that wish. I hope you get that wish, because Game 7 would mean Celtics made it through Game 5 tonight. We want to talk about a couple more NBA things. We already kind of touched on the disrespect that both the Cavs and the Warriors have had for their first two opponents. The Warriors made the comment about not wanting to go to Utah and Salt Lake City, not out of not wanting to play at Utah, but their feelings were about there being nothing to do in Salt Lake City. They weren't fans of the lack of nightlife there. Cavs, there were a couple of incidents throughout the Raptor series. LeBron taking a fake swig of the fans' beer. LeBron spinning the basketball before hitting a three. So there's disrespect storylines flying both ways. Who is more disrespectful? Who has been more disrespectful, I should say.
I mean, you know what my answer is going to be. It's the Warriors, right? Like, somehow the conversation has shifted from, you know, the Cavs being this, like, kind of, you know, it was at the beginning of the season, the Warriors were the bad guys. That's what we all thought, because Kevin Durant leaving Oklahoma City to go join the enemy, they looked like a dominant team. They are, on paper, the best team in the NBA. They were the bad guys, and now somehow the image has shifted to the Cavs, and I don't fully understand it. I think one of the biggest differences is I think the Warriors take it off the court a little bit more frequently than the Cavs do. Especially one player in particular. I mean, Draymond Green. He's on Twitter all the time, like, throwing shade and whatever the kids say at other players.
Oh, my God. Oh, I hate it. You sound like such a four-year-old dad. Whatever the kids say, tossing shade, putting shade
whatever.
Down.
I mean, he does, right? Like, his beef with Isaiah today because Isaiah – or Kelly Olynyk. Dude, you're Draymond Green. Why are you calling out the Celtics' like seventh best player on the team who wears a thick headband and has hair down to his butt?
That's super like, disrespectful to Kelly the Clinic Olynyk. Super disrespectful.
That can't be his name.
That's his name, man. I wouldn't lie to you. You think I made that up?
Dude is opposite of clinical.
You think like, I made that up? No. That, okay. Kelly the Clinic.
Anyways, I just like he takes it to Twitter more frequently. Yes, LeBron was disrespectful towards the Raptors, but I mean, honestly, what has they showed him nothing this postseason, so like, why should he respect them?
No, I'm in 100% agreement with you. I think all those things that we just mentioned about the Cavs are like situational, incidental things. You got Draymond Green walking off the court like with
showing the Jazz the and or the Kevin Durant like you know whatever. Saying some words that we cannot say on this podcast.
Yeah, telling the mascot to get the bleep off his court. So I agree with you 100%.
Just disrespecting the whole city.
Yeah. But yeah, I there's an interesting phenomenon that happens when you win a championship. It's the same thing happened with the Warriors last year. They were the darling when they beat the Cavs in 15. And then last year, all of a sudden people started turning on Curry and started turning on Draymond. I think ultimately this year, if and when they meet, it'll still be the Warriors as the villain just because you have all of the extra stuff. Plus, you have the KD addition, I think is more.
Well, yeah, the Cavs will be the underdogs. So, yeah, I mean, exactly. I think even in that moment, Hubie Brown will be cheering for the Cavs. I mean, just quick little side note. Like, if you Google him, that's like one of the first things that comes up is how much he hates the Cavs.
The first thing. We were looking this up before we came on, and I searched Hubie Brown, and the first Google recommendation is. Hubie Brown hates the Cavs. Hubie Brown is also 83 years old, believe it or not.
So we're not going to touch it anymore. We're just we're moving on.
A little bit of ageism. That's enough NBA talk, I think. Do you agree?
Oh, I mean, there was that very important topic. But sure, I mean, if you think it's enough.
No, we can talk about it. There's.
I mean, I think we can reach into the bag one more time because John's not here. So, like, there's no one to say no. Let's just be hyper-consumers of the NBA right now.
Amen. You just convinced me. All right, MVP talk. You have some thoughts about LeBron James not being seriously considered for MVP.
Yeah, I mean, I know the numbers don't back me up, but I just think like it needs to be said when we talk about the MVP because it blows my mind when I think everyone unanimously says this, right? Whenever they're talking about the MVP, they always offer this like one little caveat. It's like, well, we all know LeBron James is the best player, but Harden or Westbrook are my MVP votes. And that it's just like take like time out, dude. Like, take a pause. Look at what you just said, because we all know it. Like, we know that LeBron James is the best player, and I don't. Yes, his stats don't look as good next to Harden and Westbrook, but his team's most certainly better. I mean, he's played in that like the finals for the past like decade and a half. Like, I know that's not true, but it seems to be true. Like,
it feels true.
It feels true, and I have a hard time imagining that if you put LeBron. In Westbrook's spot or LeBron and Harden's spot, that those teams wouldn't be significantly better.
See, I think the litmus test should kind of be the opposite. It's if you took him away, if you took player X away from their team.
I think that argument works in LeBron's favor as well.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I was going to try to disagree with you and say like that you have to look at the individual season and regular season. And LeBron does take nights off and he rests. And there's something to be said for like what Westbrook does, what Harden does, where they play every night. But it is a ridiculous statement because any sane talking head would agree with you that like LeBron James is the best player in basketball.
We all say it.
You should just stop. You should just stop right there. He's the MVP.
Yeah. And I think like we have to know like there's something of like some sort of accountability that has to be like had because like we have created this LeBron in a way. Like we told LeBron that he is chasing the legend of Michael Jordan. And that is about trophies. And so, like, we have told him the postseason matters more than the regular season.
I think we've also just normalized his every night just kind of accepting the fact that, yeah, he came to this Cavs team that was mediocre, not a playoff contender, and in a year they made the finals, and another year they won the NBA championship. Like, that's remarkable. One player has that impact.
Yeah,
I think we've normalized it. I wanted to disagree with you, and I couldn't.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's why we need John.
Love to put you in those spots.
Okay, we are going to move on to a segment here in honor of it just being the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do the Fire Four of dynamic duos, and we left this open-ended, as we like to here. It could be sports-related. It could be not sports-related. We have some that are both, and hopefully this will kind of be humorous, a little more humorous than some of the other ones we've done. And so we are going to do our Fire Four of dynamic duos. Did you rank yours?
No. I feel like they're all just tied for first in my mind.
Yeah, that's true. There's so many to choose from, is what we found when we were doing this exercise. Mm-hmm. It's really a rich tapestry of dynamic duos that exist, and we're just going to bounce around to a few. I'll start. How about that? We'll mix it up since we're okay. Doing things a little different. But number one, 1A, I guess we can say, is peanut butter and jelly. All-time dynamic duo.
Mm-hmm.
I bring a peanut butter and jelly sandwich with me to work for lunch 4 out of 5 days of the week. I occasionally will catch some flack for bringing peanut butter and jelly to work as a grown adult, and I think that's wrong. It's the most versatile, universally loved, filling, and delicious lunch of all time. I also brought one every single day from kindergarten to senior year of high school, and I have not gotten sick of them since. So peanut butter and jelly, number 1A, don't shame people who eat peanut butter and jelly as adults.
Yeah, so I think just kind of jumping in the conversation here, I do agree with you, but I'm actually looking at our Fire Four. And it's kind of interesting how we've kind of played off each other a little bit, because I have a food choice as well, and this was not planned. So cookies and milk, I left that super vague because some people are Oreos, you know, like, and I can...
We could do a Fire Four of cookies.
I can mess with some Oreos, typically like the whole box of Oreos in one sitting.
Wait, what's your rule? What's your rule of cookies?
Oh, my rule of cookies is you can't just have one cookie. It's a life lesson. Write that down.
Yeah. Cooper taught me that freshman year of college.
If you have your bingo card out, write that on the back side of your bingo card. That's an important one. Yeah, and I think just kind of throwing this in there, I've tried to create sort of like a hypothetical list for John. Things I think that he would say if he were here. I think his food choice would be cheese and crackers. And I have to agree with him.
I agree, 100%. Really, cheese and anything. The guy loves cheese.
I mean, really, who doesn't? Cheese is good.
Yeah.
But John loves cheese.
Almost as ubiquitous as peanut butter and jelly.
Mm-hmm. John loves cheese a little bit more than most. So I think that would be there.
If you want to message him, or like message the All the Small Takes account and like...
Ask for John's cheese recommendations.
Yeah, ask for his Fire Four cheeses. He would love it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just send him like a nice picture of some Gouda.
I think use the Twitter, I think. John would respond to that really well, because I think that kind of ties in with the den of hyper-consumerism and all this stuff.
Agreed. All right, my number two dynamic duo, hopping back to sports, is Manny Ramirez and David Ortiz. These are the Red Sox lineups that I grew up with. Fearsome, a 3-4 combination in a lineup that we may have ever seen in Major League history, going back to like the Murderers Row Yankees. When those guys were for the Red Sox in the mid-2000s, it was frightening to face them. Two very lovable personalities, too. And really worked great together. They brought a lot of flair to the game that you had to appreciate. So,
okay, so I think my like kind of strictly athletes category would be Kobe and Shaq. Just, I mean, I don't really have anything to say about your Manny and Ortiz pick because I know nothing about baseball. So just going back to the NBA, as if we haven't talked about that enough already. Kobe and Shaq were dominant, I think. You just kind of look at their rings, and it kind of speaks for themselves. And the two didn't even really like each other, but somehow, like, worked it out. Cough, cough, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook. They are on speaking terms now. I'm just throwing it out there. And once again, I'll speak for John, because I know he loves it when other people speak for him. Ben Simmons and Embiid, I think, would have been his... you know, dynamic duo, and somehow he would have made some ridiculous argument about how the two are the best players in the NBA, even though they have yet to, you know, really ever be on a court together.
Well, you see, the model in the NBA is going to switch, Cooper, and all these teams that are going small now, they're going to go, they're not going to be able to match up with four guys over 7 feet. Hey, did you know? You know that Ben Simmons grew an inch this past year?
Nah, wasn't prepared for that. I'm going to mute myself.
I'll do my number three, my number one C, I guess, is Brady and Belichick, sticking with the Boston sports theme.
Hate you so much. Unmuted myself for that one.
Similar to what Cooper said about the Kobe and Shaq dynamic duo, the rings don't lie. The hardware doesn't lie. And Brady and Belichick, the success they've had is rare in any sport, but especially NFL, where it can be so fickle with especially head coaches. But also, it's very rare to find a quarterback with the durability that Brady has shown. So probably the least surprising pick of all, but I had to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. Like, I almost put Tom Brady in here. But with your – I would have put Tom Brady in a token, under 6 foot slot receiver. But –
Gritty.
Yeah, gritty. I'm actually kind of very intrigued by what happens after, like, post-Tom Brady era. Like, I really want to see it because I think it's going to answer lots of questions. Like, we know Bill Belichick's a good coach. But I think some people out there, me, think – or like wonder about how great Tom Brady is, or is it really just like this mastermind of football who's like the smartest guy that we've ever seen in the history of the league, just like coach this guy up and build all these brilliant I want to know the answers to all those questions.
I'm going to ask you to go watch Super Bowl highlights and find the first throw that he completed in the overtime against the Falcons.
Hold on, no. Amendola. You're misinterpreting me, as John does every single week. That
trying to keep it up.
I'm not saying that Tom Brady is not a great quarterback, but I want to know like how much of an influence Bill Belichick has had in his greatness. Obviously,
wanna,
like the two are linked.
Isolate the variable.
Bill Belichick can do this with another quarterback, that's going to answer lots of questions for me.
Okay,
it's pretty much what I'm getting at. Anyways, moving on, sticking with the NFL, I put Roger Goodell in CTE, which, as you've heard before, I've been falsely accused of supporting concussions on this podcast, which is definitely not true. Actually, I think out of the three of us, I'm the only one to boycott watching the NFL because of their stance on helmet-to-helmet hits. But this is kind of maybe an unfortunate circumstantial connection, but I think it's been made, and it's true. I mean, Roger Goodell is not doing anything to, like, help the health of his players, right? I still don't fully understand why we don't have a penalty in the NFL like we do in college, which can kick players out. I've seen plays, and I'll reference that Bengals-Steelers game from 2 years ago, which was one of the nastiest football games ever played, where my Bengals, obviously, is in my memory. Giovanni Bernard got knocked out on a running play and then fumbled the ball only because he got knocked out in a helmet-to-helmet hit. Sometimes NFL games are kind of hard to watch. Anyways, moving on to John's pick. I couldn't really think of one for the NFL. I tried to think of something Eagles related, but then I just got kind of stuck on like Philly, like Philadelphia and fist. It's almost like the two kind of like go hand in hand. Like the city of brotherly love is, yeah, hand and fist. The city of brotherly love is kind of not known for its brotherly love, right? Like we like all the Rocky movies and all that stuff and all the boxing that goes on in the city and all the fighting that also happens at their football games within their own fan base.
You really put Philly with any blunt object that could be used to strike.
Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't going to go there. So, John, if you're upset, that was Jeff, not me.
Sorry. All right, we'll do the last one kind of quickly. My 1D, my last dynamic duo, my Fire Four, is Manti Te'o and Lene Kakua. The long-lost girlfriend, rest in peace.
I mean, I kind of get where, like, Manti Te'o was coming from, right? Like, I mean, he was doing these, like, Skype things, kind of like what we're doing now. Exactly. Did I just make a connection between Manti Te'o and this?
I think we did. I think we just related to Manti. Am I more of a Lene, or which one of us is more fake?
Oh, me. Have you seen what I'm wearing? I think that's real investigative journalism.
Yeah, and then John in this scenario is Deadspin.
Yeah, John's Deadspin. That's
coming
true.
Break the story.
When do I get my Heisman? Or I guess you would get your Heisman. I don't know.
I don't know. I lost track of this metaphor long ago.
Okay. Anyways, kind of sticking on this Notre Dame theme, Brian Kelly and opening play timeouts. This is something we talk about in college football a lot. Opening drives are scripted, or at least supposed to be scripted, because you've had the past 6 days to prepare for your opponent, and you should kind of have an idea of generally what plays you're running, and typically like teams like to walk through those plays and practice them and all this stuff. Yet, for whatever reason, Brian Kelly never fails to call timeouts on the opening play. That's ridiculous. And I think if there was some like advanced sabermetric for it, he would have to be the leading candidate.
Yeah, you wouldn't know this if you didn't watch every Notre Dame game the way we do, but it happens a disproportionate amount of time.
It's just like the most frustrating thing. Like how does the play clock run down on the first play of the game? Like, what are you doing?
I like that you said we hear this talked about a lot in college football. Like, I don't think we do. I don't think any other college football.
No, I was talking about like we hear like the whole like idea of scripting out your play, your first drive.
I don't know if we do because it's unspoken. It's assumed that other teams have that figured out.
I don't know if Notre Dame does. I'm saying the other successful teams that don't go 4-8 college football programs do. And I think John would address me by saying that Brian Kelly's trying to solve this issue with the last dynamic duo, which would be Brian Kelly and yoga. Because the thinner that Brian Kelly gets, which I think we're up to like 80 pounds or whatever, because it's exponentially growing every single week, which I would love to keep track of like, a graph that we could share with our listeners, that now Brian Kelly can get off the field a little bit quicker so we can get those opening plays in.
Oh, I didn't even think about it that way. Mm-hmm. Nice spin.
Because he shed that weight. Yeah.
I'm with you. All right, that was our Fire Four of Dynamic Duos in honor of John's absence. And we are going to throw in now another quick segment that's also a little bit of a hat tip to John, as he ends every episode with, says dope. And so we thought we would do a segment called Dope or Not. And we picked three things, and we were just going to give a simple, maybe not so simple, answer about whether these things are dope or not.
Have we shown like maybe that we miss John just a little bit too much?
And we're just paying our respects.
Okay. Just double checking.
We're sending good vibes your way, John. We know you're in a tough place right now. Mm-hmm. Keep fighting the hyper-consumerism.
Just another quick little plug to send your thoughts and prayers to John. He really needs him this week.
Peace and peace. All right, dope or not. As I mentioned at the outset of the podcast, the Zo2s, the big baller brand Zo2s, Cooper, are they dope or not? Visually, I should say, just visually.
Nah, not dope. Not dope. Anytime you put snakeskin on a basketball shoe, not dope.
Agreed 100%. They are not aesthetically pleasing at all. Would not buy, even if they weren't $495. All right, second dope or not. LeBron James. Also, we also hinted at this one earlier in the podcast. LeBron James picking up that adult beverage during the Raptors series and pretending to drink it. Dope or not, Cooper?
Not dope. Poor choice. Poor choice of beverages. Because the beer that he picked up, or sorry, the adult beverage that he picked up was produced by a company that had previously produced a beer in honor of him leaving Cleveland. So not dope. Poor choice of beverages, LeBron.
Wait, since when did the B word become something we can't say on this podcast?
I don't know. I'm just being extra careful. Okay. I'm using the legal advice that John has solicited to.
Yes, our lawyer, John. We might actually have to cut that. I don't want to get him in trouble. I'll say it for him. John is not a lawyer. No legal advice is being given by any member of this podcast, including Cooper and I, but especially not John.
The opportunity was just it's too ripe for the taking.
Oh my gosh. Dope. I think LeBron's picking up the adult beverage is dope because he's of age. He was setting a good example for the kids. He had a really very reasonable he mimed a very reasonable sip, a social consumption, one might say. And he had a nice choice of beer. I'm not gonna give that company free advertising, but I've had their beer before. It's not bad. It's not like he was picking up some domestic cheap bottle stuff. He was going for some classy craft beer. Respect.
But
that.
Jeff, would you give them paid advertising?
Oh, 100%.
Okay, just double check.
Our DMs are open. All right, last one, dope or not. Shaquille O'Neal is running for sheriff in 2020.
Dope. Super dope. Like top of the dope meter. I don't even know how that works. But yeah, that has to be up there. That's really cool, especially his, you know, his incentive is to rebuild the relationship between the community and the police. I love the idea. And if, I mean, he doesn't win, I'm going to be a little upset, a little disappointed. I think we should cover that election, though.
Maybe we should go live. We should like travel to, is it going to be in California?
No, it's in either Georgia or Florida. He's a resident in both.
I agree. This is dope. I also think this seems like, do you remember those commercials when he was on NBA Countdown, like the Shaqtus commercials, or like when he would like, they'd be playing Scrabble and it would be like all different variants on the word Shaq. This seems like a skit from one of those commercials, but it is really cool.
Dope.
It's dope. Agreed. All right. Our last segment, the waste of data, the segment we end every episode with. Cooper, you have a handful of waste of datas here. Waste of data.
I do. So I kind of had to.
You do.
Yeah, I do. I do have a decent amount of, I think, choices here. Kind of had to sort through them a little bit or just run through them very quickly. I'm going to go with the second option. The Cowboys Vegas line came out with a win total at 9.5. That doesn't make sense when you have the, you know, best offensive line in the country, a top five running back, and a quarterback who's decent. You know, we don't really know how great he can be. It's incredibly disrespectful of Dak Prescott, and that defense is only getting better with the return of Jalen Smith. So that's a huge waste of actual data. I think the first time that actual data has been used within the waste of data segment.
There, oh my God, always... I wouldn't say it wouldn't be a waste of money to maybe put something on that if you wanted to and if you could legally do so.
Is that official advice?
No, that is most definitely not official advice or condoning of gambling.
All right, so if you make that bet and the Cowboys come, you know, at under 9.5, we know who to tweet. let's see. I'll also stick to Draymond Green calling Kelly Olynyk dirty. We had referenced this, or I had referenced this on Draymond Green, you know, Twitter usage. Draymond, you can't call anyone dirty. You kick someone in the groin at least every, you know, a couple times during the 84-game season. And it's a ridiculous claim. Kelly Olynyk's not dirty. He flopped anyways during the Kelly Oubre play. Or at least I hope you flopped, because either you flopped or you look like the softest player in the league.
He got dropped.
So, but we're going to give Kelly Olynyk the benefit of the doubt. He flopped, and therefore not dirty. So, Draymond, wrong on both accounts.
Wow. This is quite the reversal from a couple playoffs ago when Kelly Olynyk, not a dirty play, but hurt Kevin Love in the opening round, and you were up in arms.
I was irate. But still, he's not a dirty player.
All right. My waste of data to close us out is Shaq, who's making a double appearance on the podcast this week. LeVar Ball tweeted out that if you can't afford the Zotus, then you're not a big baller or something to that effect. And Shaq replied to him and said, oh, shoot, what did he say? Hold on. I'm going to restart this.
While you're doing some research, it's not wrong when it comes to me. I mean, I'm not a big baller, and I can't afford those shoes, so works out in my case.
Shaq said, hey, at LeVar, big baller, real big baller brands don't overcharge kids for shoes. And it's got, like, over 100,000 retweets on Twitter, and it's a picture of Shaq from his younger days, along with Shaq's shoe line, which I had forgotten about until I saw this tweet, but it had, like, the silhouette of Shaq dunking on the side of it, and they were cheap basketball shoes.
Cheap as the Starberries?
Not as cheap as the Starberries. Not $15.
So glad that made an appearance on the podcast, finally.
Didn't you have a pair of Starberries?
No. I had a pair of Allen Iverson leather shoes that could be zipped up.
Dope or not dope?
Dope. Oh my gosh, so dope. Jeff loves Starberries.
I do love Starberries.
Almost as much as John loves cheese.
Almost as much as John loves cheese and hates hyper-consumerism.
Uh-huh.
So that's our show for the week. Thank you guys for tuning in to this special two-man edition of All the Small Takes. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate you letting us know what you think of this show and any shows before it. You can find us on those social media accounts that we mentioned at the start. Next week, John will be back with us. I'm sure he'll be very pleased with this week's episode and how well we did in his absence. Don't you think so, Cooper?
Yeah, I'm excited because it kind of removes the awkward Manti Te'o scenario, metaphor. Yeah.
So we'll be back next week in the same time and same place.
You should have recorded him saying dope, and we should have thrown that in.
Yeah, we should have called him. Oh, we should, like, because he texted us in the middle of the podcast. It was like,
I know he did.